And
checking.
We're recording. Checking. Welcome to Eat the Rich with your host, Jared Holt. Hi.
Please interview me about my sullen eyes and exhausted affect. I actually got a little present for you guys that I thought you'd find it interesting. It must have been 2 months ago. I had a few flagons of ale, and I bought something on Amazon, and I totally forgot about it because I had it sent to a buddy's place. And then I went there this weekend, and they were like, "Yo, shit, this thing came from you." This is a, let's just call it a booklet from 2009, and it's Donald J. Trump, Think Like a Champion. So there was an excerpt for this. I think you would find this to be very interesting. Keep in mind the timing of this. This was from 2009. And it starts off, the first chapter of this whole book is called Barack Obama Election Ushers in a Different World. And I just want to read to you the first paragraph, which says, "Barack will need to be a great president because we're in serious trouble as a country. It hasn't been this way since 1929. So he doesn't have much of a choice. He will simply have to be great, which he has a very good chance of being. What he has done is amazing. The fact that he accomplished what he has in 1 year and against great odds is truly phenomenal. If someone had asked me if a black man or woman could become president, I would have said yes, but not yet. Barack Obama proved that determination combined with opportunity and intelligence can make things happen in an exceptional way. The world is excited about Barack Obama and the United States. Let's keep it that way."
When is this from?
2009.
Can you hold up the book thing? Yeah, I love having these kind of words of wisdom, you know, pocket size. That way,
it's like 4x3, this book.
That way, you know, when I'm out on the town with my friends at the bar and, you know, I hit, get a few drinks in, hit that dark spot, I can, you know, whip out a little piece of inspiration to cheer myself back up.
It's like a pocket daily devotional. You can pull it out every morning and, you know, get optimistic about Obama in 2009 when he had a supermajority in the Senate and a majority in the House and all the things he could have done with that. And the goodwill of a large grassroots movement.
That's correct. Chris, I think I find it very curious that you're choosing now to criticize Barack Obama.
Are you a Trump supporter or something?
No, in fact, I like him so much, I'm going to write him in November. Try to scold that, Libs.
What's amazing to me, too, is that no less than 2 years later, this same guy that supposedly wrote those words, which obviously didn't, spearheaded the birther movement against Barack Obama.
Well, have you seen the birth certificate, Dwight?
He's got to release the long form one. I mean, you know, if even his mother's word isn't good, how do I know?
I think I saw it the other day again. Like, occasionally you'll see this meme that circulates of like pictures of Trump with, like, I think Al Sharpton is one of them, like various, it's like a montage of him with various black people. And they'll say, like, no one ever accused Donald Trump of being racist until he ran for president. When, like, the 5 years before he ran for president, like, his entire thing was Obama is a secret Kenyan Muslim. Like, his whole thing, like, he was the racist guy. Like, that was his thing. That was what got him into the politics, really.
Yeah. And he, like, I think it was in 2015, he took an award, like Man of the Year, from World Net Daily, which is like the article, which is the website that like your grandpa prints off to read in the large font because he can't zoom the computer. That's just like, breaking news, tarantula bites prove that Obama is Muslim hellbent on destroying the Christian world. It's like, so he goes to this conference and, you know, accepts their nomination to be the Man of the Year, you know, is very, very proud of it. I don't know.
It's so funny.
There's so many like weird little nuggets like that I feel get totally cheated out of the national discourse because Trump is like doing actually horrific, terrible things that everyone has to talk about. And also he's a dang Cheeto. We all know this.
Can he say that? Cut it out.
So there's just like all these weird little nuggets of like bizarre freak show shit that's just like buried under the rug of even more bizarre freak show shit.
I mean, yeah, Trump is, I mean, without a doubt, the funniest president. Like, the shit that's going on is objectively hilarious, but if it wasn't so overshadowed by, like, actual evil and horrible stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, like, up on the debate stage, he, you know, not so subtly was like, Marco Rubio's got a tiny dick. Talking about the hands or whatever the fuck. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Got, I mean, and then like a month later, Rubio tanks.
Right. Or like even worse is like, you know, Ted Cruz, like his your wife is ugly, your dad killed JFK.
Amazing.
Then a month before the election, Cruz is making campaign phone calls for Trump.
Oh, he's super cucked for him. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Can you imagine the converse, like the car ride over to the White House with your wife, who, you know,
well, we got to do it, honey.
Can you imagine that car ride? Sitting, just imagine being Heidi Cruz and like thinking about every fucked up thing you've done for this absolute fucking slime ball that's sitting next to you. Just a lifetime of regret of the 100 cans of soup for the honeymoon. You remember that thing with Ted Cruz? I think we've talked about it on the show.
I just always remember the picture of him in front of the butter cow. That's like, my daughters would love this. They yes, love butter.
Of course.
It's like, fuck.
Speaking of Ted Cruz, there's a really, there's like a collection of footage. I know Vic Berger has done a lot with it, but there's like some like, I guess like maybe raw footage of like Ted Cruz and his family that was like all posted on YouTube in like 2015, 2016. That was like, they like, I guess pulled clips out of it for like campaign ads or whatever. I'm not sure why they posted all of the raw footage. It was like him and his kids and his wife eating dinner. And like, they clearly like just hate him and resent him.
Yeah, no, it's B-roll yes, that the campaign put out. Because, like, the campaign can't give super PACs, you know, these clips.
Oh,
but
I see.
If they just posted them on YouTube quietly and the PAC happened to find these clips and decide to use them in their own ad, you know, blah, blah, blah.
What a fucking joke. And, you know, and I'm reminded now, thinking about the Marco Rubio thing, that hopefully by the time this episode comes out, it'll be, like, the eve of the debate. Look, we've all been in quarantine more or less for the last 6 months now, and I'm not looking forward to much, and I'm really holding on to, like, I feel like I'm floating on an iceberg and just like trying to hold on and stay above cold water, but that I am looking fucking forward to.
Yeah, we have the first debate in 2 days, and then I believe approximately a week after that, we have the vice presidential debate, and then a week after that, we have the second presidential debate, and I think the third one is like maybe 2 weeks later.
But it's all Christ.
It's all coming up, man. We're barreling towards it. It's almost election day, really.
I know, man. I got my latex suit, my jug of Crisco. I am ready for this shit, dude.
Predictions? Debate predictions? Is someone going to call someone a pedophile? Is someone going to accuse someone of threaten to lock somebody up? I mean, what's going to happen?
I think that they're just going to accuse each other of having dementia. And then
they would, like, both be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them is going to have some sort of a cardiac event or a blood clot of some kind. Somebody's going to trip over their words. Half of their face is going to droop. It's going to be really weird.
Now, what's going on with Kamala Harris? Because I feel like we don't really see her very much. Like, she's got this, you know, debate with Pence coming up, but like, this feels like her first really big public appearance. Honestly, is it just me? I don't see much of her.
Yeah, she doesn't really do laps in the media circuit much or anything like that. It seems like the whole Biden campaign strategy is they are under the impression that Trump is just like curb stomping his own dick repeatedly in public. So they're just going to like stay out of the way and let everybody see. But
it worked. It worked great last time.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I remember, yeah. You know,
fucking hell.
I mean,
Hillary Clinton is president now.
It's all this shit, man. Because like at the end of the day, like, do they really disagree on that much policy wise? Like, they say they do, but like ultimately the class interest is still the same. So like it's. It's different with somebody like Bernie because he's like not about the class interest shit. Like, he's not like, oh, we have to be nice to the pharmaceutical companies so maybe like grandma can pay $300 instead of $312 a month for her medication. You know, it's like I don't know, like a lot of this shit's just like window dressing, right? A lot of these policy pages are window dressing, and it just doesn't feel like there's a lot of substance there.
They're running the Hillary playbook again. He's not even fucking like barely campaigning in Michigan from what I saw.
Yeah, no, they're not campaigning.
They should send Lena Dunham to perform like Fight Song 2.0 for like out of work steel workers or something. That's what they should do. That'll win them over.
I just want Biden to do a word for word impression of the Hillary Clinton alt-right speech. That was PP the frog.
You know, thinking about it now, like what are the policy differences that, you know, if Joe Biden would have been in office for this time? I mean, obviously he wouldn't have done the Muslim ban, and he probably wouldn't have done the corporate tax, lowering of the corporate tax. And, you know, but aside from that, I don't know. I'm sure there's a million things I'm not thinking about. He wouldn't have had the sustained campaign to destabilize most of the departments underneath the executive branch. You know, he would have probably, who knows, the fucking NDAA, the military budget, might have been ballooned to the level that it was under a Biden administration as it was under a Trump administration. But they would have probably lost the midterms.
I guess the big thing I wonder about is, you know, what would have happened with like our imperialist wars overseas? Like, would we have invaded Syria? Would we have, you know, I mean, of course we are engaged in acts of war against Venezuela, but like, would we have fucking bombed Venezuela? Like that sort of stuff. Like,
but
it's not that Trump is anti-war, but he certainly has, at least to some extent, we haven't really entered any new like major conflicts. We've continued all the old ones.
Biden's whole thing is like the foreign policy chairman guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, Joe Biden spent decades on the foreign, what's it called? The Foreign Affairs Committee in the Senate. And that was like his whole thing is like, you know, proselytizing American imperialism. He voted for the fucking Iraq War, like a minority of Senate Democrats that voted for the fucking Iraq War.
Did you see Mehdi Hassan's tweet today?
No, what was it?
Hold on, this is really good. I tweeted something like almost identical as a joke like 3 days ago.
Oh, no.
He said, since much of the media failed to do it for the last 4 years, Biden shouldn't be afraid to call out lies as lies on Tuesday night. Say it again and again. That's a lie, Mr. President. You're lying to the American people again. And maybe even the occasional, do you have no shame?
Oh, that should do it. That should do
Literally just looking Trump in the eye and calling him a douchebag to his face would be much more effective.
Accuse him of wearing a diaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Accuse him of wearing
a diaper. Show us you're not wearing it, Mr. President.
Show us your ass, President.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Biden may also be wearing a diaper.
That's fine. Know. Yeah, but it's
Did
very
you see Jerry Nadler Trump. Possibly shit his pants the other day on TV?
Listen, man. Speaking
of diapers.
You know, you're so quick to criticize.
It rules that we're like everybody in power is like 80 years old and senile.
So quick to criticize the gerontocracy. These people are doing their best.
I'm still thinking about the TV interview that Pelosi did where she just like rebooted in the middle of it. And she's what's the plan for Democrats? And she's like,
Good morning.
Sunday morning. God. It was like Westworld.
When the Vivans kicks in.
It was so good. I mean, like, that feels like something I would do. I would get nervous on TV and just like blank out and then be like, good afternoon. And it'd be like a nightly news program.
At least she got the day and time of the day correct. It could have been worse.
Yeah. I mean,
by the way, I looked this up the other day because I was curious about it. Do you have any idea? Take a guess. What do you think is the average age of a current member of the House of Representatives and a current member of the Senate?
Ooh.
I'm going to go 57 in the House and 71 in the Senate.
How'd I do?
Yeah, you know, that was higher than I thought. Because you got, in the Senate, you got some real outliers. You got some on the other end of the bell curve. Because, you know, like Chuck Grassley's like 89 or something. So
they wheeled Strom Thurmond into the Senate until he was like 99 years old.
Yeah.
To just sit there and drool and babble, and maybe probably say slurs occasionally. I don't know.
And then some aide would come tap him on the shoulder occasionally and be like, hit the yes button, hit the no button.
Here's your applesauce, sir. The average age of a member of the House of Representatives is 57.8 years, so you were spot on with that.
Wow.
Senators is older, but younger than what you guessed, 61.8 years, so 62 years old and roughly. But like,
what do you have dragging that down? I guess like Chris Murphy's pretty young.
Tom Cotton, he's probably like 14. Who fucking knows, dude? He'll be in politics forever.
I know. Jesus Christ. Moonlighting on 4chan.
But I mean, so, you know, the result of that is that we have, like, you know, the two dumbest, oldest, most senile people ever, like, running for president right now. And that's the debate we have to look forward to.
What an exciting choice.
I would prefer if we didn't keep referring to them as, like, old senile people, but the experienced members of society that they are.
Right. They have the wisdom. They have the wisdom that comes with age.
I'm sorry, sir, but you're simply overqualified for this position.
I mean, you know, probably a good metric would be like, are you still able to drive a car? Like, has your family taken away your driver's license? If your family has taken away your driver's license, I don't think you should. I don't think Nancy Pelosi can drive a car. Like, we got people in the Senate that are like,
Trump has never driven a car. For the record,
well, of course, yeah, absolutely. Well, he looked pretty badass in that truck. Remember
that? He did look pretty badass in that truck, filling out that seat in that cab real well.
Yeah.
Double cheeked up in a Mack truck on a Sunday afternoon.
That was the day Donald Trump became president, and they parked a big rig on the White House, outside the White House, and let him get in it. That was the top moment of his presidency.
I can't say I would have a different reaction if I walked outside of my house and they're like, check out this fucking sick 18-wheeler. I'd be like, hell yeah, dude, this rocks.
If they really wanted to fight fire with fire, they should get Chuck Schumer in like a welding mask or something, at least that's relatable. Because if I was a trucker and I saw him getting behind the my place of business, I'd been like, at least somebody's reaching out instead of Nancy Pelosi in front of a $30,000 set of fridges. Oh.
Dude, you know what else I've been thinking about is, like, especially after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died and, the mass hysterectomy story about, like, what was happening at ICE detention centers. It's like people, my favorite is just, like, the lib commentators being like, we are living under authoritarian rule. It's time to call it what it is. The F word, fascism, which is why we must go to the polls and vote him out.
That's why we're still confirming all of Trump's federal judge nominations. Yeah,
we're all very concerned about fascism. However, we will vote for the military budget.
Did you see, there was another, I posted it in the chat yesterday, but did you see that post from that guy? It was old, it was like a month ago, but I missed it. I think it was when I wasn't on Twitter. It was like, whoever said liberals are useless, we'd go out and vote right fucking now if we could. And
that like, was like, gold, bro.
You better hold me back, bro, or I'm going to go fucking vote on him.
I'm gonna vote so hard, dude. Try to stop me.
Dude, if I was there, I would have fucking voted. Like, not even think about it, bro. Yeah.
Terrifying the octogenarians working the polls as a volunteer as he slams the curtain shut behind him. Just going.
Yeah, you normally punch a hole in the ballot. He just pulls out a fucking gun and shoots the box next.
Now, when I was a young boy, about the age of 5, my teachers taught me I could be the greatest man alive. They told me I could change the world, be whatever I wanted to be. There's no one in the world like me. Every one of us was so unique. I'd not be an average man. No, sir, I'd be no average man.
Welcome back, everyone, to Eat the Rich. This is a show about our political economy, late-stage capitalism, and the millionaires, billionaires, and multinational corporations hell-bent on staving off his death rattle. I'm Dwight, and today we have with us Chris.
Howdy.
And a reporter covering right-wing extremism and disinformation, returning champion to Eat the Rich. Much appreciated and obliged to have you, Jared Holt.
Hey, good to be back.
Honor to have you. Thank you very much for joining. And I think given kind of everything that's going on, this was an apt time to have you on to discuss your wheelhouse. And Chris, I'll turn it over to you to get it started.
So I guess consider this sort of a companion piece. We already did an earlier episode about police militarization. And I guess that was before the George Floyd murder, I believe. That was before this sort of renewed protest against police brutality and systemic racism and that kind of stuff. So we wanted to talk a little bit more about the police, but also their sort of ununiformed allies in right-wing extremist groups. And the way they sometimes quite explicitly coordinate and work with each other, and the way their interests do line up, and this sort of symbiotic relationship they have with each other. The modern police officer, essentially grew out of, slave catching and strike busting trades. And to this day, the job is basically to, protect the property and the interests of the ruling class, to keep the homeless out of sight, to keep the, non-whites in their neighborhoods, to disrupt and suppress any kind of, the resurgent left-wing movement in the country right now. And I was thinking after the Kyle Rittenhouse murders, I sort of made this observation, kind of half jokingly, but like ironically, he's making a good case for police abolition, because he shows that people who are eager to volunteer to do the job of the police, and they'll do it for free. There's people who are stochastic terrorists who are willing to become instruments of capital and to kill and to die to defend the interests of the ruling class. And we've been seeing more and more of these right wing groups cropping up, especially since 2016. With Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys, and I don't take this as a point to their credit. But I think that sometimes I think that when you look at these guys and you watch them online and you interact with them and you'll find that I think that among people on the right, and I certainly don't mean all of them, but I think that sometimes they have the most coherent ideology, and I think that sometimes they're the most intelligent, as opposed to like your average like lunatic QAnon grandma whose only ideology to speak of is like Chrissy Teigen eats babies and Donald Trump is going to stop her, or like a rich fucking asshole who's like just like a regular Republican who just wants low taxes and stuff like that. But these guys in general, like they have at least some semblance of an ideology. That ideology is fascism. I think that they, like we have, they see kind of the writing on the wall. They see the empire crumbling. They see capitalism collapsing. And absent any kind of like class-based analysis of that, what you end up with is you need a scapegoat, which becomes, black people, Muslims, Mexicans, communists, all this sort of stuff. And I think that they, again, like us, have sort of made this calculation that, we're reaching the point where, the choice is either socialism or fascism, and they've made their choice. And they're organizing, and they're out in the streets, and they're killing people. And so we wanted to talk a little bit more about this and, the way they're aided and abetted sort of by their allies in the police departments. And so I guess we wanted to maybe talk a little bit. It seems to have passed rather uneventfully, but the Proud Boys had a rally yesterday. Jerry, can you tell us anything about the Proud Boys rally yesterday?
So the Proud Boys once again descended on the city of Portland, Oregon. They claimed they would have thousands of people showing, like tens of thousands of people showing up to rally in support of a Patriot Prayer member who was shot and killed by somebody who identified as an anti-fascist, and to, I believe the goal was also to kind of, pour one out for Kyle Rittenhouse. So,
terrifying.
Those numbers did not happen, but they did manage to, scare the shit out of the city. Ahead of the event, prominent Proud Boys figures were kind of openly discussing their desire to commit violence, methods of legally committing violence, using paintball guns in a way that would inflict damage, trying to be very menacing towards anti-fascists who would oppose them. And it got so heated that a state of emergency was declared the day before, and various police departments, I think maybe it was the state police and one other one, kind of said that they just like weren't going to police this. They didn't feel they had the support to be able to do it properly. But all of that said, what these end up being is like anywhere from 200 to 400, like mostly out of town people flying in, hoping that they're going to be on like the ground for the first shot in you know, the giant fucking civil war or whatever they think is going to happen. You know, they are, you know, think of themselves as culture warriors. So, you know, the people who are showing up to this are effectively like the foot soldiers. You know, this event follows a long pattern. You know, Portland, Oregon has been a huge hotspot for fascist demonstrators and whatnot, especially ones who are planning events hoping to get some sort of resistance to show up so they can, you know, do some street brawling or engage in some violence. And not only that, there's also a police department in Portland that is largely kind of sympathetic to the groups too. So it's a place where they can go cause chaos, wreak havoc, get in fights, do whatever, and then like mostly be left alone by the police department there while they do it. So, but yeah, you know, on one hand, you know, you want to make fun of them and be like, oh, well, that was kind of a fucking dud, wasn't it, dude? But like, on the other hand, it's also like kind of a feeling of relief too, that like, this wasn't what they said it was going to be.
Right.
Because otherwise it could have been very deadly, very dangerous.
You know what I was thinking about earlier before this episode, and I did a little bit of looking into it. I was like, when it comes to this, I mean, what we're really talking about is white domestic terrorism. It could be looked at as that from like a clinical view if we were trying to say like, hey, how do we categorize these people without tying it into like a broader ideology of right-wing fascism or something like that. And I found from a Time article from 2019, this was before the El Paso murders, which it feels so long ago now. But it was interesting statistic here. It said, since 9/11, white supremacists and other far-right extremists have been responsible for almost three times as many attacks on U.S. soil as Islamic terrorists, the government reported. From 2009 through 2018, the far-right has been responsible for 73% of domestic extremist-related fatalities, according to a 2019 study by the Anti-Defamation League. And, like, even if you were just not tying this into that larger battle of like ideology of, you know, human sovereignty versus, you know, fascism at the hands of these instruments of capital, like, I looked up how much like the no-fly list costs to maintain, and just thinking about like, if you were really trying to stop people from doing terrorism in what we and what popularly people think that terrorism, like capital T terrorism, looks like, the no-fly list alone costs $1 billion to maintain. And I was like, then what?
How? Where does the money go?
Yeah, so give me $1 billion.
I'll make your spreadsheet for $1 billion.
I got a notepad right here.
It's interesting. I saw early on in the 2000s, and I don't remember this. I was fucking, you know, in high school or whatever. But early on in the 2000s, the government came under fire. It might have been like the nascent Department of Homeland Security came under fire because they wanted to use people's credit scores as a measure of whether or not they should be put on no-fly lists. Like if they when they were looking at people to be put on a no-fly list, that they would take their credit scores into consideration.
I wonder if I'm on there. Did they start doing that?
I didn't see your name. I didn't see your name. I wish I could find that again.
Yeah, you have. Instead, they settled for the much less discriminatory option, which is you pull out your credit card, and if it's anything below a Chase Platinum, you don't get on the plane.
That's it. Us rubes that use credit unions are just not going anywhere. It said, I don't want to belabor it, but it said the American Civil Liberties Union has long criticized the no-fly list and similar list because of the lack of notification to persons included on such lists. The constitutional rights are at stake, blah, 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 blah. Among the complaints about the no-fly list is the use of credit reports in calculating the risk score. In responses to the controversy, the TSA officials said in 2005, only in 2005, that they would not use credit scores to determine passengers' risk score, and they would comply with all rights guaranteed by the First and Fourth Amendments to the United States Constitution. Again, you know, not much of a stress to think that the TSA has been doing weirdly unconstitutional shit since its inception. But yeah, I mean, going back to the point about like domestic terrorism, we can talk about this at the end, but like in tying it into the upcoming election and this kind of like doomsday scenario that I was working myself into a froth about earlier today in anticipation of this episode. But this Southern Poverty Law Center article that you sent me, Chris, really struck me And yeah. there's a point of it that I want to that struck me that I want to read here, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
And it said specifically in the context of police, it says in light of or perhaps despite the increased scrutiny. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the totally wrong fucking episode or wrong thing here.
I think I've got it. You know, despite controversies over the sale of bathwater, Bella Daphne. Wait.
Oh my God! I forgot about that. Who was that?
Belle Delphine or something?
Yeah.
Who knows, man?
It is Belle, but I don't even fuck. Jesus Christ! There's so much dumb shit that goes on. But anyway, Cassie Miller. Was writing about this in the Southern Poverty Law Center on the article titled, "This is the moment of the Proud Boys we have been waiting for." The Proud Boys have been waiting for. And it says here, after waging a pitched political battle on the streets for years, their aims have become all too predictable. To provoke confrontations with counter-protesters, blame any resulting violence on the left, and press for further repression and retaliation against those they consider political adversaries. While anti-fascists stand at the top of the list, journalists, Black Lives Matter activists, anti-capitalists, and anyone organizing and protesting peacefully for economic and racial justice are included as well. And then it goes on to talk about the Proud Boys and their response to the Black Lives Matter movement. But an interesting thing that we were thinking about was like, and we've been seeing, is how the police have tied in to the right-wing extremism. And I think it'd be fair, it wouldn't be hyperbolic at all to say that they have been, they have, with their actions, condoned the presence of right-wing extremists at the protests, and in some cases, like, offered material aid to them.
I mean, I've seen video, there's been plenty of videos of like, you know, right-wing groups, members, people at protests interacting with police, chumming it up, like, you know, talking about their guns, looking at each other's guns. I mean, it's frightening. It's fucked
it
up.
Is frightening.
I mean, they clearly don't have much of a problem with each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like
at the very least.
Right. Like there's on one hand, like, you know, it is not illegal to be an extremist in the U.S. Right. Like to believe extreme things.
Thank God.
Which is good. but
Google Building 7.
But kind of like where we get the hangups here is like a. Yes, there's certainly plenty of police departments that we've seen, you know, videos, reporting, etc., of officers or leadership within the police department being sort of deferential towards these extremist groups. You know, certainly when they're pitted against anti-fascists, you know, I can't tell you how many like extreme right-wing events I've been to where the line of cops has their backs to the right-wing extremists and are all facing out towards the anti-fascist or the anti-racist or whatever. And I feel like that kind of says it all right there.
Sure.
Yep.
But, you know, a lot of it is kind of, I think that if you are a police officer already kind of tasked with defending Capitol, being a agent of order, whatever, you see yourself more in the right-wing extremists than you would, you know, sort of the left-wing activist who's seeking to, you know, question your employment or question your job or question your role in society. So, you know, I think at the very least, it's safe to say that the police are, you know, treat right-wing extremists much more favorably. And, you know, kind of the second part of this, too, is that there's not a domestic terrorism sort of carve out in the law. So a lot of the times these extremists, you know, even though these are, you know, these groups are deadly threats, these members commit insane acts of violence. Really, until the El Paso shooting, we didn't see the DOJ or the FBI kind of chase these groups very hard. And then even then, they're not arrested for the sake that they're like essentially doing terrorism. They're always arrested on like a guns charge or like right. drug charge. Because that's illegal. But, you know, advocating for and working towards, you know, installing another genocide in the country is not a crime here, for whatever fucking reason. I don't know.
Jared, what you just said there about, you know, installing and doing, you know, fascism and coups and shit like that in other countries using the American military and stuff like that ties in, interestingly, that something, Chris, that you said earlier that really is ringing in my head and I can't stop thinking about it, which was you said that the right wing, the white nationalists' ideology is very coherent. And it's like
much more so than some others on the right. Sure.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that and I was like, why is that? And then I think one of the reasons we can explain that and why that would make sense is like the apparatus under which we've grown up is just a kind of buttoned up version of that. Imperialism is an arm of white nationalism.
Sure, sure. I mean, they're the ones that are willing and want to do the dirty work to like keep the empire intact and to keep, you know, to protect capital and to protect the interests of the ruling class. I mean, all of these things are necessary to keep the state as it exists going, you know, and they're the ones who are willing to do it and who want to do it.
Yeah, they are simps to capital. In this thread, I will explain how Donald Trump's tax returns show once and for all that.
Oh God, I don't even want to get into that.
One,
I
mean, that's out of 150.
Oh Jesus! But like, this is also the words that were ringing in my head today, which is Joe Biden when he was talking to some, you know, Wall Street fuckers or whatever, saying like, nothing will fundamentally change under a Biden administration. And what is he saying? He's saying we will continue to use state resources to aid your capital material interests, to aid your shareholder value, and to make sure that we continue to move towards a profit, you know, profit-seeking behaviors. We will continue to use the state for your benefit. That's what he was meaning from this. And the police is an arm that's doing the same thing. And so that was really interesting that I wanted to bring up as well. And this is from this PBS thing that I read from 2016, written by Kenya Downs. And we've alluded to this on we've alluded to this FBI report on the show before, but I don't think we actually like formalized it and really talked about it. And I won't get into the actual report because I tried to read it today, but the government mumbo jumbo is so fucking insurmountable. It doesn't even make sense to read about. So this, Kenny was very nice to digest it for us. And it says here, in a 2006 bulletin, the FBI, so this was 10 years prior to this article being read, written. So this is 14 years ago now. In the 2006 bulletin, the FBI detailed the threat of white nationalists and skinheads infiltrating police in order to disrupt investigations against fellow members and recruit other supremacists. The bulletin was released during a period of scandal for many law enforcement agencies throughout the country, including a neo-Nazi gang formed by members of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department who harassed Black and Latino communities. Similar investigations revealed officers and entire agencies with hate group ties in Illinois, Ohio, and Texas. I'm going to say that again. Similar investigations revealed officers and entire agencies with hate group ties in Illinois, Ohio, and Texas. Much of the bulletin has been redacted, but in it, the FBI identified white supremacists in law enforcement as a concern. Again, as you said, Jared, it's not illegal. As a concern because of their access to both, quote, restricted areas vulnerable to sabotage and elected officials or people who could be, quote, seen as targets, potential targets for violence. Listen to that very carefully. And
that's the risk, huh?
Right. This is the part that fucking blew my mind when I read this. And I'm going to read that sentence again. Much of the bulletin was redacted, but in it, the FBI identified white supremacists and law enforcement as a concern because of their access to, quote, restricted areas vulnerable to sabotage. So what are we talking about? Like dams, highway overpasses, like, you know, power plants.
Arby's, Shake and Shack.
Bagel Boss. And elected officials or people who could be seen as potential targets for violence. So what they're really concerned with is damaging capital or infrastructure that lubricates capital and potential targets for violence, like assassinations or something like that.
The concern here is still maintaining the order, right? It's like, oh, these guys, neo-Nazi gangs, huh? They might get a... I don't know about you guys. It's a little concerning. They might get a little too spicy in their defense of the white homeland.
they're saying, what if they stop punching people of color and start punching white people of power?
What if they punch us? Can see, you think
the other thing is too is like what you're referring to here is like people like police officers who, you know, are explicitly members of or have ties to hate groups, and like there's probably way more cops than that who aren't affiliated with hate groups who are just racist, who are like if you're a racist, like why would you not want, like your perfect job would be like you get to get paid to beat the shit out of black people, like that's like yeah. that's that, like that, there's a whole like just beyond the ones that are actually affiliated with any sort of hate group. I mean, the profession draws that type of personality. Just you know,
wait, Uncle Tony, you're telling me I joined the force and they give me a pension for this? Are you kidding?
And so I guess my point is that those people as well, whether or not they had any formal ties to hate groups or right-wing groups before, you know, they joined the police force, certainly, you know, nowadays as more and more of these explicitly right-wing and white supremacist groups are emerging and going out in the streets and marching and murdering people, I mean, it's of course no surprise that, you know, the police are always going to be on their side.
Yeah, and at what point would you then... At what point of, quote, infiltration of people that have been, you know, affiliated directly with hate groups, at what point would the saturation be enough to call the police a hate group?
So I'll give you a little piece of something that I think kind of puts this into scale for people. There is an anti-immigrant hate group in D.C. called the Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR. They have an event every year called Hold Their Feet to the Fire that has like members of Capitol Hill and the most fucked up right-wing ghouls you can think of, like Ann Coulter and shit.
Oh,
like,
Lord.
They set up a big broadcast row and just flood the airwaves with this like anti-immigrant dog shit. Every year they pay to the tune of like $1,000, $2,000 for local and state level law enforcement leaders, sheriffs specifically, because they're political elects, to fly in for a conference where they teach them all about how scary immigrants are and the border crisis, whatever. This year, 191 sheriffs traveled to this conference on the organization's dime.
No
way. And to round out the whole fucking thing, they stood and smiled with President Trump on the front steps of the White House. So, you know, this is kind of like what we are dealing with. This isn't just like, oh, you know, what's the whole thing about like, well, everybody hates bad cops. Like this is really kind of built into the DNA, and like there's so much
right.
infrastructure to try to influence law enforcement from hate groups that, you know, this when people talk about like systemic change, this really is a systemic problem. And it's not going to be like, you know, if we put Sheriff David Duke in the corner for 30 minutes, like we solved racism. You know, it's like this is gonna be a hard thing to change. And kind of what you were talking about, Dwight, about, or no, I think Chris, you said this is like the ideology is more coherent than some. I think, you know, for them, I think it's easier to form a coherent ideology when the goal is like either returning to something that already existed or maintaining the status that exists currently. But when you have to think of like systemic change or how you would reinvent it or repurpose it, things get a bit more abstract. So it can feel less concrete. But yeah, it's bad. It's all bad. I'm a bummer. I have nothing good to say.
No, you're in good company.
Welcome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, thinking about that fucking the dude that's ready to I would be ready to vote tomorrow. Like, how would that be helpful for this problem?
Vote the bad cops out of office.
I'm gonna go vote so fucking hard. Get my sheriff out of there. Oh man, he's gonna regret the day that he shot and killed 19 unarmed black people, because I'm gonna vote him out. That's for fucking sure.
Like, how would electoralism be at all meaningful as to make change for this particular scourge, for this particular problem?
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you were talking earlier about like nightmare election scenarios. I mean, let's say Biden wins narrowly in a highly contested election. These groups aren't going away. QAnon's not going away. The white supremacists aren't going away. I mean, do you think they're just going to accept it?
I mean, if anything, there's a decent likelihood that these groups will, at least for a short moment, like ramp up in numbers and funding and everything, because exactly. Now they're on offense. And, you know, if you watch sports, it's always more fun to watch your team on offense, you know?
I'll do you one better, Chris. Here's a scenario I was thinking about.
Okay, hit me with it.
What is stopping Proud Boys and fucking 3%ers and the guys that run Black Rifle Coffee and all that shit? What's stopping right-wing groups from coming to intimidate poll places in November?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
And I mean, a lot of them are already planning it. To do that,
there's already been some like voter intimidation, right? Where was that they had the Trump supporters rally?
Fairfax, Virginia, I think.
Yeah,
and more importantly, who would be there to police them? Because right. Like yeah. Law enforcement has already established, you know, they're already established to enact state violence against the most marginalized groups in society. B, they've already been infiltrated by white supremacists as an organizing strategy and have co-opted the punitive arm of the state. And C, they've already shown definitively that as a structure, they are sympathetic. The police as a structure are sympathetic and have offered tactical help to those same people that could potentially be there to, you know, intimidate voters and shit like that. Now, think about that all in the stress of a single day of elections. That can't be done over.
Especially an election where it's very likely that by the end of the night, we still won't know what the result is. It's going to be very likely that it could be days or weeks even before the outcome of the 2020 election is known. And the longer that goes on, the hotter the tension is going to get, the more contorted it's going to be. And, you know, we're running through doomsday scenarios here. My worst fear is that it's going to take a week or two. And during that week or two, right-wing extremists are going to say among themselves, are going to hear from people on Fox News and Republican lawmakers that the ballots are essentially being cooked and that, like, right. Their democracy is being stolen from them and that they are going – and that's going to be received as a permission slip to do really terrible things.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, Trump has already, you know, definitely not criticized, you know, at least maybe subtly endorsed, you know, the things that they're doing. I mean, they have impunity to a degree and they know it. I mean, they know they have the support, you know, of Donald Trump himself. But, you know, I mean, really, the Kyle Rittenhouse thing really just, I mean, that put a hole in me, man. Like that really, like that, like.
The right wing reaction to that, man. It was
yeah, nothing.
Not
nothing good. Nothing Tucker Carlson does should surprise me at this point. But to have him like night after night, like literally defend this kid, and he was not the only Fox News host to do it. I mean, it really just shows how much things are escalating. I mean, for another election prediction, I think that, like, Jared, I think you're right that we're absolutely not going to know anything that night, but I think that Trump's going to declare victory that night no matter what and, like, dare anybody to challenge it. Yeah.
Right. Obviously. Like, obviously can't predict the future, but he's already given us enough reason to believe that, like, that is, he's pretty
he's
much
been saying it for 4 years.
Before he even won the primary.
I feel like he could get out there with a whiteboard in the press, in the, what's it called, the fucking Brady press room or whatever, and just be like, I am going to claim it is stolen. And then ABC would be like, interesting new tone from the president this evening. It's like,
oh, at every corner, the corporate media has continued to let me down. You know, even like with expressing disdain against protesters, like I was thinking about this today. We talked about this in like one of our first episodes when we had Ellie Valley on, and I was talking about a book that I had read about the 43 group, which was a Jewish anti-fascist group in London right after World War II that had banded together to smash Mosley and their version of the Proud Boys, you know, these right-wing fascists, and eventually metastasize and turn into like the British National Party and shit like that. I mean, just psycho reactionary fascists, whatever. And the way that they defeated them was very simple. Whenever they would show up and have, you know, rallies, you know, like they had in Oregon and with the Proud Boys, they would show up and beat the shit out of them. They would beat the shit out of them. They had all these sorts of things. They would like hold pieces of concrete in their fists so they could like, you know, break jaws and stuff. I mean, they beat the shit out of them. A lot of these guys were previous you know, members of the military that had just come off of World War II and stuff like that. And they had to leave, you know, the battle from World War II and then come home and fight fascism at home, you know, specifically, you know, and that was specific to Jewish, you know, anti-Semitism and calling them aliens and, you know, disruptors in Britain and stuff like that. And so, you know, from that, I think it's just a microcosm of anti-fascist behavior that had needed to happen after the early part of the 20th century. But how would we translate that now when these guys are showing up with AR-15s? You know what I'm saying? Like, how would we, you know, it's not a scrap. It's murder. Like, it's not like it's certain that someone's going to be killed in a confrontation, in a direct confrontation between these guys. Like, what happened when, like, that militia group took over the Michigan State House? Like, how would you stop that? Who's coming in to get those guys out of there from seizing government property, which they did?
I mean, presumably, I guess it would have to be like the National Guard or something, right?
But we already know, like in Iowa, for instance, the National Guard was mobilized to smash Black Lives Matter protests.
You made an interesting point just now. Something you said that was interesting about the way Oswald Mosley's fascists were, you know, metastasized into, you know, the British BNP. National Party.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're going to see, like, we're already seeing that. We're seeing not so much that we know of, I think, with, you know, these right-wing groups, but we're seeing it with QAnon. We're seeing QAnon make its way into actual, you know, Congress and stuff like that. We're seeing people who believe in QAnon. Whatever. So I think that more and more we're going to see probably these kinds of groups metastasize and become sort of legitimized in a sort of way. Because I think it's really like there's a big difference now between like the perception of your average conservative towards these groups than there was like 10, 20 years ago towards like the KKK and the skinheads. Like everybody hated the KKK and the skinheads. You know what I'm saying? Like most Republicans would agree with that. You know, but like nowadays, people are very sympathetic. People are very sympathetic to these groups, you know, and I think that makes it so much more dangerous.
And a lot of that has to do with like hyping the adversarial threat, right? That's why we see so much scare porn about Antifa, super soldiers or whatever, like
the U-Haul.
Why?
The U-Haul full of signs.
Why Fox News is playing like the same like five clips of like cans on fire and shit like on a loop every night. You know, it's like they have to, and this is like a classic function of fascist propaganda, which is like creating fear of the other, you know, and instead of saying black people or instead of saying like leftists, I mean, a lot of them do say leftist, I guess, but like it's Black Lives Matter.
Right.
It's Marxist, it's communist, it's what, it's like there are historical parallels here, right? And I feel like there's, you know, it's not a perfect parallel, there's certainly a ton of different ways you could criticize that, but like there is kind of a pattern that we seem to be following right now. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you, go ahead.
I don't know, I mean, like I'm kind of at a loss for like what to do about it, because the last time it happened on a scale that was really big, the whole world started killing each other. So
right and like, and you know, it's easy to take the power out of the word fascism by throwing it around too much, but like these are fascist groups. This is how fucking Mussolini's black shirts got started, by like going out and brutalizing union members and striking, you know, people in the industrial parts of Italy. I mean, this is how these groups start. They start as street gangs and thugs, and then they, you know, grow, and then they get that gets normalized and metastasized, like you were talking about, and enter the halls of power. So yeah, I mean, you're very correct. I mean, it's not wrong to call this fascism and to draw those parallels, because they're very real.
I'm just waiting for the day that, like, you know, Joe Biden is getting inaugurated, puts his hand on the Bible, raises his hand up, and then fuck it, Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia whips out.
No. Q sent me, you son of a bitch.
This is also the problem with just having this two-party system too, is that like the only thing here's okay, if this were a parliamentary system, like you would have the Greens and you would have the socialists on one side and you would have the fucking psycho fascists and stuff like that. But instead now, like the tides are turning so quickly and both parties are agents of capital, that like the Republicans are very happily just moving towards fascist rhetoric, as they've always used fascistic rhetoric, but now they're just like having openly fascistic policy as part of their platform. And then the Democrats, as well as being a party of capital, are just conceding to it with the veneer of opposition. I almost like pulled out an eyeball the other day when I went onto the Joe Biden website, the, you know, Joe Biden, Biden for president, Biden Harris for president website, because I was like,
you're saying you went to Joe 30330?
Yes, I did.
Hell yeah, dude.
Because I was like, what are they actually running on?
Right.
Like, what are they
actually? He's not Trump. He's not Trump.
And that's it.
That's basically it.
And there was one. Yeah. There was.
Hey, remember Obama?
There was one. There was one. I really want to get the actual verbiage from it, because it just blew my mind when I read this. Because I was like, you know, there were two candidates on the debate stage during the Democratic primary that raised their hand when the question was, raise your hand if you would commit to dismantle health insurance companies to make way for Medicare for all, something like that. There were two senators, or the two candidates, that raised their hands. One was Bernie Sanders and the other one was Kamala Harris. And I was like, I think I'm pretty sure I remember, like, a few days later she walked that back. But even so, that made a big statement to me as far as, you know, what sorts of policies she would at least potentially be sympathetic to, or we could at least bully her or anybody into enacting. And then I went to the I'm like, what is their healthcare policy in the Biden, you know, the proposed Biden administration policies? And this is what the only tab that I found was: the Biden plan to scale up employment insurance.
Awesome.
And that got me thinking into like a broader conversation, which we can save for maybe like another episode or something like that, about just, I kind of took a look around and I was like, oh, this is really what corporate feudalism should look and feel like. This is really what it is. And riddle me this, guys. I have a completely unpolished thought that struck me as I was driving today, which was, one of the insults or one of the pieces of rhetoric that's always yelled at protesters, Black Lives Matter protesters, or, you know, anti-fascist protesters or whatever, is get a job. And I was like, what does that really mean? Like, I know that they're, yeah, blah, blah, blah. They're like perpetuating the stereotype that it's, these are young people and they don't want to work, and under socialism, nobody works, or whatever they think that socialism or communism is or whatever. But I was like, what is the deeper meaning to just hurling the rhetoric, get a job, at somebody? And I kept thinking about it, and I was like, it seems to me that what they're really saying is, you must be subjugated under the same system that I'm subjugated under. And the difference being is, you know, the person that's hurling that insult, you know, the fucking Ski-Doo dealership owners and the, you know, the whatever, the, you know, the fucking metal fabricator factory owners and shit that like, you know,
Mall are in Dad 69.
Yeah. You know, the people that are in the Beautiful Boaters rallies that, the fucking Trump Armada.
We love the boaters, just to be clear.
Those people that are hurling the insult, get a job, are not the recipients of state violence when it comes to the punitive arm of the state. Like, they aren't going to get their heads beaten in, even if they get a fucking DUI or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, again, to draw a parallel between, like, 1930s Germany, I mean, up until the point where, like, they went to war, it was probably pretty easy to get by as the average German, because if you weren't Jewish and you weren't a communist and you weren't Roma or whatever, if you were just an average, you know, German, you could probably ignore a lot of what was going on pretty easily and just keep your head down. And you might not even necessarily have been a bad person, but it didn't involve you.
Yeah, you're just like, yeah, I'm not like a huge politics person. I don't know.
Right. I remember hearing something somebody said about, like, the eerie thing about when that genocide is happening is that you look around and things look relatively normal.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, if you were the, you know, a German Ski-Doo owner in 1936, you know, things looked pretty good for you. Why should you give a shit?
Yeah, you're just going down the slopes, tuning in to the latest episode of Herr Rogan, and you know, not giving a shit, yeah, dude.
I mean, that's like, that's the creepy part about it that I get really concerned with, and this is why I always get so criticized. I criticize the corporate media a lot and their rhetoric around this stuff, is that, and the way that they manufacture consent, consent is specifically with the way that liberals view anti-fascism. And what I worry about is that since they are the kind of critical mass of the nation, right? I think just like, you know, liberals, people that are, you know, happy to work within the system, maybe that you know, have a paycheck, they're not minimum wage workers, they just, you know, they're a majority voting bloc or whatever. Them not doing anything is our death sentence.
Right. Well, also imagine, let's say Joe Biden does win and these protests don't let up, or they, you know, in fact, probably will continue to escalate. What is the liberal going to think then?
They're going to say, because they're exactly right. I was thinking about this today, because they're going to look at these, you know, people. Now the orange man's out of the White House.
Trump's everything's, the Cheeto's gone. It's, we're back. The glory days are back. Remember
Cheeto
Obama?
Dust.
And now we've got Joe Biden going in the West Wing and, you know,
right.
Walking around trying to make hot milk out of, you know, like right. fucking vase water or something.
Groping
in the middle
interns
of the night. Yep.
And, you know,
and there's
applesauce dribbling down on his fucking bib.
Every single intern calling them, you know, Susan. It's like,
where's Margaret? We used to have Margaret around here. And we're still out there protesting in front of, you know, in Lafayette Square, and liberals right. are going to say, like, cut it out. It's time for brunch now.
Right.
I'm going back
right.
into Biden. It's time for brunch now.
We have to come together and unify. Yeah, cut me a fucking break, man.
And they're going to be enacting the fascistic rhetoric against us that to stop the change, to stop the Black Lives Matter movement, and stop the
right.
upheaval
right.
of state violence.
I mean, the largest escalation of militarization of police in this country happened under Obama. Like, Obama gave more fucking surplus military equipment to, you know, local sheriff's departments and police stations, police departments, and any of the, I mean, that was the largest escalation of that ever. And I mean, Biden is like, if Biden gets in there and this shit does not stop, yeah, he's gonna fucking crush it, you know, with an iron fist.
Or even more scarily, like, there's a not outside chance that Biden, if he's elected, does not make it through his first term. I mean, the man is 78 years old. You know, to be honest.
Well, all right. So, okay, here's another nightmare. I've been thinking about this one, too. And let me hit you with this one. Here's another nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
All right. Joe Biden does not make it through his first term. Kamala Harris finishes off his term. Or Joe Biden only serves for one term and then steps aside. And then Kamala Harris runs. And then she serves two terms. And then what I'm saying is, it could be 12 years before we ever have another electoral shot
right.
at this, before we have another primary. It's hard, you know, I'm starting to get, like, heat, I think, from certain quarters of Twitter for maybe joking about not voting and stuff like that. But it's like, how could you be motivated about electoral politics? I mean, we're fucked. We're absolutely fucked. And like I said, we're not going to have probably another Democratic primary where, even if another Bernie Sanders somehow emerged, it could be 8 or 12 years before
right.
we have a shot at that.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, if you live in a red state, you know, because our country leans on the Electoral College, like, why would you even go to the polls and, like, try, you know? If it's like, oh,
good
my
point.
State normally goes, like, +12 red, then, like, are you really going to, like, fill out the paperwork or whatever to do mm-hmm. absentee voting for Joe Nothing Will Change Biden, you know?
I'm going to say something a little bit controversial.
Bro,
I'm going to go ahead and preemptively say
I disavow
this.
I'm afraid
I can't comment on that right now.
If I lived in a swing state, I would maybe consider voting for Joe Biden. I would maybe consider it.
Look, I thought you were going to say
as much as
you were going to
no,
vote
I mean,
20
that's
times.
It. As much as no. No, seriously, because, you know, I joke about it, and, like, I live in a red state. I can't vote even in this state anyway. I don't have voting rights in this state.
We'll talk about this later.
You know.
Yeah.
but, like, what I'm saying is, I mean, yeah, this... I mean, Joe Biden sucks, but Trump is worse.
Yes.
I mean, if, you know...
Oh, there's... We have... It's either...
And this is, like, I think we've gotten... And I'm definitely guilty of it, but I think that the left is sort of... We've become, on Twitter at least, so nihilistic...
Yeah.
That we've just kind of shut the whole thing off. And I certainly joke about, like, voter fraud and not voting and that sort of stuff. And again, I'm not going to vote. But if I lived in a swing state, you guys might want to consider it out there.
I'm going to do it with the full knowledge that electoralism is one very weak prong of a multi-pronged approach that we need to do to create the change that we need in the country. Because at best, what a Biden administration would do is buy us some time.
We don't have a lot.
And we don't have a lot.
And that's the thing that pisses me off about the liberal argument is like, well, you know, we got 8 years to pull them to the left and we could do this and we could do this. The fucking planet is dying.
Millions of acres were burned.
We don't have time.
So this is something I think about a lot. Like something that I can't seem to square in my head is like to what, you know, we were talking about earlier. It's like nothing that like, you know, the three of us would envision would be positive change for the country, right? Like this big systemic reform or whatever. Like none of that happens unless we get like the MSNBC viewers like on our side and like the you know, wine mom resistance libs have to like come over to the cause. And like their cause for the last fucking forever has been electoralism. So it's like, I personally agree. Like that is like, it's part of the equation, but it's not really like the main event, if you will. But like on some level, we have to also try to treat it like a main event, because that's like the at some point you have to speak the language of the people that you want to sway over. So I've always struggled to kind of square that in my head, right? Where it's like, this is really important, not only for like, you know, you have to demonstrate that like this can be legitimately brought into power and not just like, you know, doing crazy stuff like right-wing extremists do. But you also have to like be able to pull in the people who are like too squeamish for some of the other elements of it. You know, it's like ultimately it's a numbers game, and like electoralism is like the numbers game that everybody plays, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I want to be super clear about this. Like if you have left-leaning tendencies, and if you're listening to this, you most certainly do, it is incumbent on us to infiltrate the spaces, the liberal spaces of people that, you know, may have maybe weak viewpoints, or, you know, there's some space to sway them towards leftist ideas and democratic ideas, because if we don't get into those spaces, then we can't create the critical mass that we need to enact the change that is going to literally save a majority of people on this earth. I mean, I think, like, unfortunately, this is also by the design of, like, capitalism, is that it gives managers of capital, those that don't own it but are paid enough wages to defend the system that is giving them, you know, their fucking two-car garage and blah, 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 and pool in the back that's a bitch to clean every spring or whatever. You know, that's like their little struggles and stuff like that. It keeps them in that little struggle bubble that they're like, well, this isn't so bad because my head isn't being, you know, smashed against the concrete and I'm not being shot by a fascist or whatever. We have to get into those circles because they do have the critical mass to change the electoral outcomes. But on the other side of it, the other prongs of it are mutual aid and labor organization that we have no choice but to continue to try to push for. And maybe that even means like dropping out of the, I don't know. We should all just honestly just ingratiate ourselves in the lives of aging spinsters and take all of their money. Like, target the widows and widowers. Target the old, feeble, rich people. I don't know what to say.
Here's what we do. We go down to you know, the local experienced civilians retirement complex, and you select yourself a nice person, and you know when you become romantically involved and they write you into the will, instead of writing your name down at the will, you write Democratic Socialists of America, and then cover it up really fast. Then take away their reading glasses, turn it in real fast, and that's how socialism comes to the U.S., folks. It's you take the money that Charlie Kirk is supposed to get.
Look, we are not going to address an upcoming climate holocaust without addressing the profit-seeking motives of capital. Because I was thinking about this today, and again, I had so many jumbled thoughts, and I really didn't have a chance to kind of, you know, formalize this. So forgive me if I'm talking off the cuff, but like 100 years ago, when fascism was like a burgeoning ideology, and don't quote me on the history of it, but just stay with me for a minute, guys. Mm-hmm. There was more profit to be had. 100 years later, after industrialization and technologicalization, whatever, and consultants and stuff like that, profits are dwindling. And I've talked about this. We've talked about this on another Eat the Rich episode about the idea that was popularized by Marx and was also created by Ricardo and Smith and stuff like that about the tendency of the rate of profit to fall and about how it trends towards zero. Mm-hmm. And as things get thinner and thinner and thinner, and the ability to make money, it becomes harder and harder and harder for the capitalists. They're more and more willing to create acts of violence against us to not change the structure of power that they are the beneficiaries of. So, you know, we're going to vote for Biden, whatever, it is what it is. But this is the way we get out of this is not electoral. There's no way that we get out of this in an electoral way. This goes beyond this. I like even just thinking like, how the fuck do liberals not recognize how anti-democratic the system is when they're worried about women's rights being completely fucking erased in this country because an 87-year-old woman died? How does that alone not fucking radicalize them? Like, do they not see the larger context that this comes from? That is not a way to govern. That is not a system of governance that is fair or democratic. That, like, the rich fuckers that end up being presidents get to dictate who are those gilded precogs. Oh, we were talking about it with Lloyd Howell. That's what it was, Chris. These gilded precogs from fucking Minority Report that get to just sit there and erode our rights for like 60 years or however they're long, they're fucking alive. We have to allow this to be a radicalizing moment for liberals because we need their critical mass. Oh, it feels bleak. Anyway, it looks like it's going to be a lovely weather day this upcoming week.
Thanks for joining Eat the Rich in the morning.
The caller number 3 will get 2 tickets to Foghat at the Raceway Complex.
Jesus, that is real, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's real.
Man. Yeah, no, I mean, like, this moment has to, you know, to what you're saying, Joy, it's like this moment has to radicalize the libs. I think that, you know, radicalizing the libs is the way to get this done, right? It's a combination of, like, grassroots organizing, because I certainly don't think that, you know, at any time in the near future, like you were saying, Chris, that we're going to have solutions to these problems coming from the top down. I think it's going to have to come to the bottom up until the numbers get so big that the politicians are scared of it, right? And like they're gonna have to say, like, okay, well, we have to figure this healthcare thing out, otherwise all of us are getting voted out next time, you know? It's like that sort of shit, or like we're all gonna get primaried, we're all gonna get AOC'd or whatever, you know? Yeah, it's also like kind of a struggle right now because you have, you know, all these forces on the right trying to push the Democrats further to the right, convincing them that maybe like they'll pick up like whatever the opposite of Dave Rubin is. Like, oh, I was a right winger, but then through logic and reason, I came to support Joe Biden, the pedophile, or whatever. You know, it's like
like Dwayne Johnson, like The Rock.
Who knows, man? But you know, it's I think chasing the mythical swing voter, which is really like there aren't many. They're like unicorns. Like legitimate swing voters are kind of like unicorns. I think just building that coalition and building that power structure on the left is really like what needs to happen. It's just like organizing down to the granular community level, or even just with your coworkers being like, all right, if the manager starts fucking with one of us, you know, we're going to agree that that's fucking with all of us, you know, and like that yep. sort of attitude is kind of, I think, what is going to ultimately change stuff.
Right. And again, let me just kind of touch on what I was saying earlier. Like, I know this shit sucks. And it's like things don't look good, but like don't slip into nihilism.
No,
don't take the black pill.
Nihilism seeing, is like, so fucking dumb.
It's bait, man.
I'm seeing that
is the best case. Like the forces that be that like are contributing to the like the very real struggle that so many people are feeling, and that like people like us, like-minded people like us, are, you know, hoping to like somehow affect and change. You becoming nihilistic, you becoming black-pilled, you becoming, you giving up, or you thinking that there's no legitimate way to do this, it's like Christmas morning for those people.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. Right.
They want you to give up.
I mean, the struggle to change one from one economic system to another. I mean, like, feudalism didn't switch to capitalism overnight. I mean, this, it took centuries. These things happen like different parts of the world, and like some of them fail, and then some of them start over, and like fits and starts and stuff like that. I mean. This isn't going to be easy, but it's not. It's certainly not hopeless, and it's certainly not going to happen overnight.
And there's a good amount of stuff that was spilled to make the changes of those.
From
one economic system to another. And if you I'm sorry to spoil this for you guys, but if you are feeling discouraged, or you need to be pumped up and understand what we need to do to change this economic system that has, you know, kept us as complete just stooges of capital for so long, listen to the outro song that we're going to play for this episode to, okay, to pump you, up.
Okay.
Oh, you'll enjoy it.
'Cause I had high hopes for the
Candy by Mandy Moore.
Hell yeah.
No, I'm kidding. You'll see. But fucking just... get ready, because it's going to need every single one of us, and every nihilist. You know
how you slipping into your Biden impression.
No. Listen, we can't just sit by and watch these fascists take over the streets. No,
come on,
you gotta get some. You gotta get some barbed wire. You gotta fill some water balloons and put them in the freezer.
Back in my day, my dad, we'd go down to the hardware store. We bought that barbed wire. It was 10 cents. Any working man could afford it. But in Trump's America, barbed wire, it's not what it used to be, folks.
You know how you get the straight razor and you put it in the bucket of water to get it rusty, and you bang it on the curb? That's actually like a real Biden quote.
That is a real Biden quote. Biden.
So listen to Joe Biden.
Based Antifa Joe Biden.
Right, yeah. Black bloc Joe Biden.
That's right.
Everybody keeps asking, where's Joe Biden? He's just in his basement. Joe Biden's out on the fucking streets. What are you doing? Like,
yeah, he's out there getting into scrap, wearing a black bandana on his face.
Joe Biden, he's putting...
No.
Not me. Joe Biden is.
No.
Joe Biden is.
No, we're not putting that in.
No.
No, we're not putting that in.
This is not the day I get on a watch list.
Yeah, exactly. Jared, thank you very much for coming on with us, buddy.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
It really is a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate it.
If for anybody that needs to have what I think is some of the deftest explanations of right-wing extremism and journalism in this country, highly recommend following Jared Hold, because I was thinking about this earlier. I'm just continually in awe of your bravery in reporting and what you do, and I know the flack that you get. So thank you for doing what you do, Jared.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Someone's got to do it, and I get a paycheck for it, so hey, not too bad.
And it's signed by George Soros.
George Soros.
All right, let's say hi to Pierre, and stay cool.
Stay cool, folks.
Stay frosty, everybody. Till next time.
Watch your six.
Neo-Nazis take a seat on a London council. The extreme right-wing racist British National Party has scored its first political success in Britain. In a council by-election last night, it took the Millwall ward of Tower Hamlets in London's East End. The area has been the scene of a string of vicious race attacks. A week ago, 17-year-old Asian Qadis Ali was beaten senseless by a white gang and left for dead. He's still in a hospital with a coma.
What can anybody do about it?
Fight them, basically.
But how do you mean fight them?
We'd say that the ideas that they put forward outside football grounds on working class estates have to be combated politically, but also that they've got a physical agenda, and that has to be met physically as well. People have to defend themselves against the fascists. They can't just turn the other cheek.
Back, valley burnt down to the last attack. To the law, lost no time. because I was not a trained journalist. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to help me.
Objective factors that existed in Europe exist here. The only thing that will make a difference is the subjective factor, whether people are prepared to take them on or not.